10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Goblin.
I'm Ed Till. Welcome to Sterling Every Damn Night. What a show. By the way, so who is this guy, Ed Till? Heard him the other night. Well, I've been on radio for many years, had a national radio show for years, wrote a book about it. My agent told me to say that. You can go to my website, edtill.com. Enough about me. So great show for tune. I'm very excited about what we're doing. Because the other night we had a blast, and we're doing more of it. If you are a late night radio person, it's a pleasure to meet you in this environment. Many decades, I don't even want to say it out loud, scare the kids who are listening. I'm sure we have somewhere, there's a 14-year-old going, wow, what is this? Grown-ups are weird. Because I remember, don't you, the first time you heard something on the radio, you had no idea what was going on, and everybody talking was very serious and adamant and super confident of it. And from then on, you're either a critic or you jump in, you get on. I got on, it didn't take me long to go to the rotary phone and get involved when I was a kid. My mom was a big fan of radio from the moment, you know, a crack of dawn. We had the morning show. We had the midday call-in contest show that my mom won several times. And when Tina would win in the olden days, really olden, you get a beautiful letter, a letterhead congratulating you on the fact that you won. And these restaurant tickets that your father's always like, what? You know where that is? What's the difference? She won. And those guys were in the background when I was a kid. As I got older, I got captured like so many people do. Late night radio. Late night with taxi cab drivers, Uber drivers, right? Lifts, right? You a lifter? Are you a lifter, an Uber, whatever? You're shuffling people around, getting them to airports, getting them home from. My last experience with that did not go well. The guy said he didn't like some of my opinions on it during the ride. So I don't know if I'm going to be able to take you home from the airport. You know, I'm coming home from Europe. It's 9.5 hours. And I think I said something about working hard or staying in school, you know, some antiquated phrase that offended his opinion. Then we were off to the races. But still, I love the engagement that radio has when you're behind the wheel, you know, when he's driving, he's, of course, annoyed by me. He's turning the radio up to use it as a wedge to block our communication channels. But no, myself, late night radio guy since as a kid. Well, the one I always tell, I self-servingly mention I wrote a book? I did write a book. It's called Hired Tongue, by Edward Till. It's on the Amazon and everything else. Get it from my website, because that way I'll send you an autographed copy. And the whole idea is of that book, and all this stuff is radio is a magical thing. And I understand the era we're in, and podcasting is. I had tapes of stuff. It's not that foreign to have recordings. But there's something magical about being live. So my first recollection as a listener is Brian Jones perishes in a swimming pool, you know, one of the founding members of the Rolling Stones, the blonde-haired guy. I think he played sitar, lead guitar, all kinds of great instruments, whatever, dead. And, you know, I'm in bed, supposed to be asleep. And I got that transistor radio, Google it, find out what that word means, transistor radio, earplug, get yourself a Google image, follow me, and plastic radio with two dials, one little spin dial that get you the station, and another little spin dial with a red slash across, and that was on-off button volume, and the way you got busted when you were a kid
what are you doing?
My father was always, he was always upset before he knew what the behavior was. He was like, what are you doing? What's that? So the earplug would inevitably toss her as a kid, toss her type of sleeper, you know, take the bed apart just by sleeping in it. Earplug comes out. Then I roll over and the wire disconnects from the radio. Radio's blasting coming out. I'm asleep. He jumps up. My mother is scared. She thinks a burglar might be bringing music for the burglary. And it's a big problem because I'm a kid and I'm getting prosecuted like an adult over all this stuff. But you make that, and then from that moment on, I knew that plugging in was important, even though it was some quick announcement. Believe me, there was no semi-documentary 2 minutes after it happened and, you know, a team of reporters. It was a break-in headline with a sound effect. Tell it to you, British guy says a couple of words, boom, back to, you know, the top 20, whatever he was playing on the air. And you're like, wow, man, I was just in England, wow. And then, you know, you're thinking like, Mick and the Boys, man, is this it? You're like 12. You know, it's very involving if you're, when I was one of those kids. So that was it, radio's in. And kitchen had the, you know, everybody had one, the yellow plastic radio. My mom put tape on the volume heights and on her favorite stations. So I guess she didn't have to reach for her glasses to tune in. She had two pieces of orange tape on the dial. And the number one guy that she followed was this, you know, Italian American wild man, crazy man, you know, middle-aged guy. He's all pro-Vietnam. He's all, you know, he's wild. He's crazy. And, she never not listened. If you didn't agree with anything this guy said, she was frightened. Sometimes she would think, he frightens me, Edward. And I was like, you know, he's just a radio, but he was just yelling and screaming like a madman. And I loved him. So then by the time I got to be a teenager, I was like, this is, you know, I had Ozzy Osbourne, had Black Sabbath's first album. And then I had, you know, Bob Grant in the afternoon. It was wild, along with the Stooges and the Ramones. Anyway, it's fantastic to be with you. Love being with you Sunday night. Ed Till, Sterling every damn night. Let me also, just before we break quickly, a little bit of housekeeping here. Told you who I was, right? And coming up on the other side of the break shortly, we're going to talk to, in my opinion, radio's greatest historian, that's a personality type historian. You don't usually get a lot of historians have a lot of personality. He's a radio historian. He's been doing this since long before I was on the air, and I've been on the air a long time. He's fantastic. And he's still just as excited and happy about it when, you know, you talk about it. Although he's got some very strong opinions. We'll get those also. So Art Volo, the great Art Volo, on the other side, Ed Till, having a blast with you. Thanks for joining us on Sterling every damn night.
Sterling every damn night, better than a poke in the eye. Sterling every damn night, he's our kind of guy. And on a star-spangled night, my love, Sterling will come on the air. You can listen to him for free. As he plays his kazoo, my love. Sterling, every damn night, for me and you.
Ed Till filling in, having a blast with you tonight. Sterling, every damn night. Walter is on spring break. He's out there having a great time. on the line with me. You know that we're having an amazing show tonight, Strippers on the Loose, Florida Stories, so much going on, but special treat for me and for you. You love radio. You love late night radio. You love the magic of radio. Our guest is, in my opinion, the foremost documentarian of radio. I know he's not the guy on PBS, you know, with all the famous specials, but he's been to every studio. He's seen every personality in every format imaginable over decades. Ladies and gentlemen, Art Volo, radio's best friend. Did I oversell you?
Yes, Edward, you always do. It's funny you mentioned documentarian because I'm actually in Des Plaines, Illinois, in a now completely empty historic Des Plaines theater where they had a premiere, red carpet premiere, of a documentary movie called The Voice That Rocked America. And it was a story about Dick Biondi, one of the most famous DJs ever here in Chicago and throughout the country.
Incredible.
It was just fantastic.
Right. There you go. Right. And again,
fantastic.
People.
I was in the movie. I was in the movie for a whole 20 seconds.
Yeah. This is what we love.
Don't blink, you'll miss me.
you're a little like Zelig in that Woody Allen movie. You pop up everywhere in the history of radio. So our time is so short. Let me get right to it. You and I have gotten together a number of times in your amazing library. But last time I got to watch you behind the microphone. So this is a question I don't ask you very often. I'm gonna put your research aside. I want you just talk for a moment, if you would, without that background noise, if you could get it out of there. Just talk for a moment about the magic of what happens when the radio connection is between you driving a car, the voice coming out of the dashboard, and also you yourself sat in the seat. What's the relationship like behind the microphone with all your years of experience?
Well, you know, I mean, first of all, I never really had a full-time on-air job. I've been a guest on many shows like I'm doing with you right now and what have you. I mean, I tell silly stories and dumb things. I did do a radio show in a town called Howell, Michigan, and actually had the nerve on the air to say on a Sunday morning, no less, that this town got its name by an old missionary finding found the town, and he said, "How will be thy name?" Because that was the name of the town, with Howell, Michigan. But, you know, and it got groans, you know, but it was fun. It was fun to do. I enjoyed doing it. And then I promptly talked up a record perfectly and then lifted the needle off the record while it was on the air.
There you go. So right there.
Everybody who's ever played vinyl records has done that on the radio.
The moment. That's the moment I want to take you to, right? Because you are an appreciator on the listening side, but now you do know both sides. I didn't know that about you. What is the magic of when it works? No matter who it is, male, female, old, young, back then, right now, when it works, what's happening, Art?
Well, what's happening is radio is changing. Radio is changing tremendously. We want to stay vibrant and fun and enjoyable. But the trouble is, it's not that radio is going to go away. Radio is changing how we listen. There are probably many people listening to your program here this evening. Instead of on the conventional radio, they're listening on a phone. They're listening on a computer. They're listening on a quote-unquote device, because that's what's happening, and it's all changing. You know, I got into a friend of mine's Tesla, and he works for a big broadcasting company, and he's associated with WGN radio in Chicago, and there's no AM radio in his car. He has to listen to his own radio station through the app. You know, it's all changing. It's a streaming world we live in.
Again, not to go too off, but let's zoom in a little bit. Is this romantic, the device part? And what really matters is, that's my guy, that's my girl, that's my show. Or does the device and being alone in the car the way most of it used to be, not on phones or people 2 inches away, was there something about the radio itself and the environment back then?
Yeah, because I came up in an era with the transistor radio under the pillow late at night and what have you, and seeing how many really far away stations I could get. Those days are history. They're just a wonderful memory, but they're history, you know.
Well, you know what? Maybe
every day I hear about more stations, sadly, signing off.
I know, but you know what? Maybe
it's a shame.
But you know what you just said? We could learn something right there. That one's a big thing to travel with the radio. Right?
Oh, yeah.
But we gotta agree. It's no big thing traveling. We gotta get the radio to do other wow stuff. Like, that's the key. The key is, radio, it's the speaking live. I like broadcasting because I like it to be happening much more than I like a rerun of something that was really good and I'm playing it back. So, anyway, listen.
Well, remember, I used to publish radio guides for people who travel so they could find their favorite stations, right. But they don't need it now.
Wait a second.
Light radio because of the internet.
Before we
don't need it anymore. I got obsolete.
You're right about that.
I got made obsolete.
Before we go.
I always love talking to you, Ed. You're the best in the business.
Thank
you.
Really, that's great. For you to say that, that means a lot. Listen, before I let you go, how many studios have you been in over the decades, and what's the earliest visit you recall?
The earliest visit was 1979, and about 46 years I've been doing this.
I love you, man.
I've done a lot of them.
I did you
in Detroit.
Absolutely. No, I've had the honor. I have had the honor more than once with you. All right, we're going to run. I'll talk to you soon. Art Volo is, they call him American Radio's radio's best friend. I think he's the foremost documentarian. Until having a blast with you Sunday night, Sterling every damn night, Talk Radio 1210, WPHT.
You still have a minute.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Okay, really? All right. So maybe I did some quick math while I was dialing up. May I have that minute? All right. Look. Now this will work in the remaining 30 seconds of this minute. Do you know anything about area rugs? Have you guys shopped for area rugs? You got to put one down. You know about the padding? You know how it doesn't come up on the sides, on the end? What kind of adhesive? What if this floor is wooden? What if it's a tile? I am buried in that. There you go. So just to let you know what's going on and what's coming up ahead. Ed Till, Sterling, every damn night, extra minute.
Every damn night from sea to shining sea. Boom, boom, hearted hoods. Sterling every damn night.
Ba-da-ba-ba. Until, you know, I'm not a shell. You heard that. They were singing the other night. It's so great to be back with you Sunday night here on Sterling every damn night. Walter is on spring break. You know, a lot of times when somebody's not in on a show and you don't mention why they're not there, or they just say so-and-so is out. I know I go through this with my favorite shows. You go, I wonder, what do you think? Sore throat, fever stomach, upset. You know, you always think about what things make it impossible, right, to go on. And a lot of times, it's not that at all. It's a planned frivolity and, fun, et cetera, et cetera. And I know he's going to be with the kids. And first he said he was going to do kid things. Then in a later email, it just referred to general activity with the kids as opposed to kid things. So you know how that can go. All right, nice. And it is any moment. What's our it's been spring. Any moment. It's been spring for what? 8 days or something. Yeah, all right. Well, where I live, it's warm already. It's funny, I was watching Channel 10 at Philadelphia News the other day, getting ready for Thursday show to see what was going on. Oh, is it time?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Here we go. Running late. Okay. So, you got a jingle ready? We are ready to go.
I already played the jingle.
Oh, we did. All right. So he's on the line. We're just going to say hi.
Well, I'm enjoying this very thoroughly. You know, it's glad to know. You know, Walter's such a family man that his daughters are very important to him. So anytime he can spend to it and be a great dad, that's the number one thing he likes to do at any time. So, you know, and Ed, you who have made such great people laugh. You really know how to make people laugh. I want to know, when is your next stand-up gig? Can you tell us that? Because you're not going to promote yourself. I want to know.
Well, you know, thank you. I did a joke about that earlier. My agent's like, are you plugging anything? I go, not a thing. He goes, great job. So next gig is I'm on performing on tax day, and I will be in.
That's what we need,
right? People will be very down. So I will do a very excitable set about the IRS and about tax alternatives. And so, right. That's the next one on the calendar. But I'm also. I'm so excited now. I'm starting to hit some of the clubs are fun. Clubs are not corporate owned. Clubs are mom and pop all across America, comedy clubs, and they are just fantastic. But you, let's celebrate what you do. And almost every day you're someplace amazing in the history of film. You're in Sacramento. Do I get that right?
I live in Sacramento. I have a residence there, but I'm often in Hollywood and often in the Bay Area because I have to drive to these places to screen movies to review on this program every damn Sunday.
That's right. And so that's it. I'm always taken by where you are, standing in some historical film site in front of some beautiful building, and your relationship with film is what made me a pen pal of yours on Facebook there and a huge fan. So, yes, go ahead.
Well, today was a wonderful day at the Orinda Theater, which is about 15 miles from San Francisco. I was doing a wonderful show with the director Joe Dante, who was here in person, and the actor Robert Picardo, you know him from Star Trek, and they were talking about the wonderful movies they made together, Gremlins, Gremlins 2, Matinee with John Goodman, Inner Space, and it was a festival where we ran all of these, and Picardo would ask Joe Dante on the stage stories about how about making it, and they shared their interests in and what they did during the production, which is great for the audience. It was a big fundraiser for this beautiful 1941 theater, which has been listed recently as one of the most 45 most beautiful theaters in the world. And, you know, like any theater, they're struggling, and so they invited these guys up here to talk about these movies as a fundraiser to help fix their beautiful neon sign. So that's what I'm doing today, but I'm supposed to be talking about movies on this show, and I suppose we should go in that direction, Ed, if that's all right with you. The biggest grosser in the country right now is Project Hail Mary. This, of course, stars Ryan Gosling, and I reviewed it a couple of weeks ago on this program, but year to date, it is now the biggest box office grosser that we've had. It has grossed $300 million globally, which makes it Amazon MGM's biggest film of all time. It's followed by Hoppers this week with some pretty good grosses as well. So that's what's going on at the box office. And
Can I just get your gut take on, do you think it's Gosling, or it's the story, or it's the perfect, they've struck the beautiful balance where it's the compelling actor I want to see, and this is a story that really takes me in?
Well, I'll tell you, and it's something you don't often see in science fiction movies. It actually is a positive, life-affirming movie. It's not one of these horrible dystopian things about the ugly world of tomorrow. It's about hope. It's about relationships. It's about a relationship that Gosling, who's stuck out in space and may not come back, meets with an alien who becomes a friend with him while they're on this mission to save the sun from dying out. And it's very well done. It's just, unfortunately, an hour too long. It's the guys that made the Lego movie and some of the Spider-Man's movie. The two directors made this movie. And it's a beautiful film. It's beautifully photographed, but it's just an hour too much. But Gosling is completely likable, and it delivers what I think is a really solid performance.
Well, there haven't been magical combinations like that recently. Thank you for that. What are we looking for on the horizon? Do you know, you hear about things being made or things that people are trying to get made or things that you yourself as a film lover wish they would be making by now?
Well, as I just have been talking with Joe Dante this weekend here, he's right here in the theater with me this afternoon. I can't put him on because he's actually talking to some fans that he's signing autographs for. But he is horrified. He goes to Hollywood pitch meetings to try to sell solid movies that he's made for us for so often. And the 20-year-old bean counters in charge of saying yes look at him with these deer-in-the-headlight looks and say, I don't get it. How would that be fun? They don't understand. There's such a disconnect that human stories and things that make us laugh or things that tie into those things we love in the past, it's a different thing. They want to repackage something that's sold before because no executive wants to go out on a branch and try something that's going to be risky. It has to have proven that it made money before, and let's do it again, because look at the glut of remakes and sequels. It's just do it again, because heaven forbid you actually go out on a branch and try something new.
So do you get the feeling that the way to make it in that environment is to, like Wile E. Coyote, just grabbing at those last few crumbs to hold on to the cliff when you feel like you're going to go falling? Or do we say to these kids, go somewhere? Somebody's been talking a lot recently about this no film school attitude. I guess Tarantino gave, right. So what's the advice to get hopeful hearts to not get sucked into this vortex that you just described? What's the best advice for the real burgeoning creative kid?
Well, now the real burgeoning creative kid has tools that we never had. I mean, they can shoot an entire movie on an iPhone, and it is a high enough quality to project in a big theater and have excellent visual quality. And kids today are innately, they understand how to edit video and audio in a way our generation never did. We would have had to go to school to learn how to edit. And of course, we came from the era of video, and which is a whole different process of setting an in point and out point. These kids can edit a whole movie on their phone while they're having a conversation, texting somebody else, and do something that is quite good on a technical level. But what they don't really investigate and grab at is the fact that they have to have a solid story. It always goes back to story, because we're going to relate to a story. It has to touch us. We have to have characters that we can care about or hate. If they don't have those values, then how do you attach yourself to a thing? If it's like the problem with the Timothy Chalamet movie, which is Marty Supreme. He plays such an unlikable character. Not that his performance is bad, but the writing of that character was so annoying and hateful and full of avarice that you didn't like him. You hated him. Yeah. Even to the end, when he might have had a moment of hopefulness, he's so dislikable. So you end up hating the movie and the thing because he performed it so well that you actually hated him.
So will it happen by accident when things go the right, when story re-arrives, will it be from a cycle of demand? Well, will it be a cycle of demand? Like, you know, there was a lot of pushback on the, I know I'm keeping you too long here, but there was a little bit of pushback.
As long as you need, but.
Thank you. Scorsese, you know, really pushed back on Marvel. You know, I don't want to see cartoons up there. I'm looking for movies, people. Is there going to be an appetite for story? And just the universe is going to squeeze one out of humanity from an unlikely corner and we rehook? Or do you think we're on the down escalator, less story is necessary?
I certainly hope that. Because I have hope in fellow human beings. Even I see young people today that show great promise, but they need context and they need a helping hand to lend them advice and send them in the right way. I think on a one-on-one individual basis that's happening within the industry. There are a lot of great mentors out there. But until kids realize that it's not just a series of music video images that are cut quickly together with just artifice, but actually have images that have purpose and meaning and connection for the audiences, it's going to be a hard role for them to develop. They have to learn how to get from that stage to telling a story that connects to people.
Do you think immersion into, you know, they sit in front of TCM for 8 years, 14 to age 22 or something like that, is really the new teacher, immersion, absorption.
Absolutely.
Me too.
As a documentary filmmaker, I've made 3 documentaries, and every movie I watch is teaching me something new. Because you watch it first as a movie for entertainment, but then you watch it again like an old friend. You visit and revisit and revisit, and then each time then you notice how the director placed his camera or how the lighting, the cameraman lit the scene for effect, or the use of color effectively, the placement of objects within the frame and how they are strategically placed to create excitement or drama, like a still photo would be composed. So these are all things that you can learn by watching, or in my case, learn about humor by listening to Ed Till.
Well, you know, there's just something magical that happens when you open yourself up to everything you just said. I do this with TV series from different eras and take a look at just that production value storytelling. Listen, I could speak with you for hours. It's always an honor, a privilege, and so much fun. I feel like we're best pals in the movie world. And I look forward to next time we chat.
I do too, Ed. Thanks so much for having me on Sterling every damn Sunday.
Thank you, Matthias. Ed Till in for Walter Sterling on Sterling every damn night, Talk Radio 1210.
Sterling!
Until in for Walter, who's on spring break. I like saying that, huh? Grown-ups on spring break. Well, I don't know. You know, doesn't sound so bad. I don't want to start that early. The kids used to get up early at spring break, and I'm good. Meet you at 3 in the afternoon. You know, I don't know. What are we doing? Cabernet for me, Grandpa. Just get me like some Cabernet and a cheese and apple plate. I'll party with you guys. What are we doing? We get a band, we get some karaoke. Karaoke is, I used to pshaw and, totally, you know, look down on karaoke. I don't know. I was all wrong. I can't get over how much fun karaoke has become. Whether you do karaoke or you go to laugh at people who do karaoke, you almost can't lose. There's always somebody who's a great singer. My musician friends also used to really, you know, frown on the karaoke, but then you wind up bumping into some kind of vocalist, you know, somebody who's like wailing in church every Sunday or just killing it somewhere else, and now they're coming in with some pop song that everybody knows in the room, and they're destroying with it. Oh, it's so much fun, karaoke. So, but before, never mind, I'm like that. I'm still thinking about movies, talking to Matthias, right? But this karaoke thing is catching on. It's everywhere now. It's, if you got an Applebee's nearby, you take my word for it. It's going to be a karaoke night there sometime soon. Chili's. Karaoke often happens on Thursdays and Sundays. Believe it or not, when I was starting out in comedy in New York, Greenwich Village, McDougal Street, big tourist trap over there, we would finish our last comedy show at 1 a.m. and he would put the sign on the street for karaoke, and the place would refill by 1:15 and go all the way to 3 a.m. closing with... You know, I think the thing about karaoke is the ones that really put their, they love this song is why they're singing it. The big motivation is I love this song. I've always wanted, and the excitement and the purpose and the power with which they go after it almost as impressive as some of the vocalists. I mean, some people, you know, they don't care. Listen. This is Free Bird. I'm singing it. You know, get ready. Order yourself a drink. Go out for a cigarette, whatever you need to do, because I'm going to destroy this thing, but I'm doing it. You know, there's those guys. But then there are some people who really wail, and my musician friends, a guy we've had on the show a number of times, Pat Horgan, discovered his last backup singer from karaoke, and he himself admitted to me that he's done karaoke, and I started to do karaoke in Italy, of all places. Italian karaoke was off the chain. There was a dude I met there. I'm watching my clock now. The dude I met there, and he just went all over Italy doing karaoke. He was doing karaoke five nights a week. He was in his 70s, had a little backpack, his little mustache. He looked like Don Corleone at the end of Godfather 1, but he was fantastic. Ed Till, in for Walter Sterling, Sterling on Sunday.
10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
Ed Till filling in for Walter Sterling on Sunday.
Sterling every damn night, from coast to coast. America's most peculiar radio host. When Sterling's on the air, the ratings are super high. And no program director can ever figure out why. Sterling every damn night, from coast to coast. America's most peculiar radio host.
Late night people, we are, right? Security guards working, Uber drivers, restaurant people going, oh my God, one more hour until we're out of here. First responders, settling in for an overnight shift. I love that. I love the overnights, right? Started doing overnights in Fort Lauderdale in 1981. It's a great story because I was not aware that they were going to change my on-air name because there was an Ed on the morning show. I was brand new to the station, didn't know the prominence of this other Ed, didn't think that me being Ed so many hours later would be an issue, but there it was in my, what they used to call your inbox. There was a cardboard thingy right near the door. You'd walk in, your name would be on there, your, you know, employment stuff, and at your first night, the bathroom key, and a memo that changed my name. Luckily, it was a very monosyllabic, so I was okay with it. I don't like to say it, you know, because it hovers over my earliest memories in radio, where I was in the hallway, very resentful of this, but also highly fortunate to have this gig, young, you know, out there sending tapes out, again, an old expression, but sending out the tapes, and my name became Kenny Knox. There you go. Kenny Knox. My parents are like, what's that all about? Oh, but you still sound good, Edward. So my mom, yeah, it didn't matter. That's his stage name, Ed. So my dad on the couch, giving me the old elbow. Fantastic. So yeah, you got your late night radio people all hanging out, overnight people settling in, people getting off of work on the East Coast at midnight, looking at less than 1 hour to go. Beautiful, beautiful. Oh, man. And we got to a great, any minute, it's coming up in just a few minutes, Vic Ferrari. This guy's fantastic. Strippers on the loose, lesbians in space, you know the whole story. It's an amazing, another amazing evening, isn't it? It's a Sunday night on Sterling on Sunday with Ed Till. All right. I think I'm caught up on things I have to do. This is the thing I would like to do and mention to you before. I think I've referred to more than once this move that I have just done. And, you know, say what you will about moving. It's a P-I-A, okay, for the you know, whatever, whatever the standards. Can I slide that by? You know what I'm saying? And in the car, you could just say it out loud. If you're alone right now, you're by yourself. It is huge. Even when they make it look good. Oh, it's a beautiful place. Oh, it's going to be this. You had that, but now you're going to have this. Oh, it used to be that. Now you're in a better this. Oh, the drive, the supermarket. You know, it's a very big, the gas station and supermarket, which big issues here. But moving is, no matter how they lay it out to you, how they pre-sell it to you, it's a nightmare. You gotta endlessly do things that you never thought about doing before. And in the beginning of my search, when first in the market to buy, I did nothing but make the single family home look beautiful. And then, you know, over all those years, and then what? Selling it? What? The market this? Whom what? So anyway, we did very well with it. And I thought, oh, look at me. You know, I sold that. That's great. And then I was like, now where are you living? So quick, go look at these places. And every one of them was failing the inspection. Oh, man. I'll tell you more about that later. But being now a new townhome owner, okay, with that means you have people on either side, have neighbors close enough that you have to say hello and be nice, and I am. But yes, now the new thing for me, never did, area rugs. What? That's right, padding. Do they stick on the end? The whole megilla of, and you start to look at them. You're either going to look at these huge things, you know, which I get very bored with this. I mean, area rug. Did you measure? Did you measure the area where the furniture is? And then what about the runner? And what about the hallway? Yeah. So I spent 2 hours the other day. The guy was detailing the car. So I said, you know, I'll go look for a rug for a little while. I came back in 2 hours. I was exhausted from inhaling all those fumes. Area rugs. And then some people go, oh, yeah, it's the best thing. Is that right? It's decorating. It's this, it's that. It's a, you know, yeah, a lot of choice, a lot of options, you know, none of which I want. I don't want any choices. I don't want any options. I want it to be just, that looks nice. And now I have to go out. I'm not a homebody. I don't hang around on the campus much. We're out doing things, but this house required so much attention for something that was supposed to be completely done. So now I had to go drive out. There's some area rug joint way on the outskirts of town because he's got this incredible, whatever he's got, I don't know, selection, warehouse, you know. And I'm walking around with a tape measure going, what's wrong with this picture over here, you know. But it's an education. I had to learn all about that. When I was looking at these condos over on the beach, it was all 1980s construction. Oh, you know about tubs? Do you know about showers and sinks and water heaters and the pan that goes under the water heater and the main? No, I don't know about any of that. And that's been my life choice. All right, Ed Till, having a blast hanging out with you on Sunday night. Vic Ferrari coming up.
Detective Vic Ferrari!
On tonight's episode of Confessions of a Retired Detective, Tiger Woods, who often drives like a bat out of hell, claims he was not abusing illegal drugs when he got into yet another rollover crash, according to a former longtime employee of the fallen golf icon. The famed athlete is notorious for speeding through his luxurious Florida enclave, the insider told news outlets. Now, he claims Tiger is a terrible driver and that he's been in the car with Tiger several times, going 50 or 60 miles an hour in his neighborhood driving past cops who don't seem to care. The crash-prone 50-year-old golfer was apparently driving with the same disregard Friday night when he swerved around a truck that was towing a smaller trailer around a narrow stretch of South Beach Road on Jupiter Island, which has a speed limit of about 30 miles an hour. The truck driver attempted to pull over, but Woods clipped the back of the trailer, causing his SUV to roll over in the crash. Cops say that Woods appeared to be lethargic and showed signs of impairment after he crawled out of his overturned SUV. Now, Woods was arrested and charged with driving under the influence and was held at the Martin County Jail for at least 8 hours, despite blowing triple zeros on a breathalyzer test. But the insider told news sources that there's zero chance the gold legend was abusing illegal drugs. Now, Tiger Woods refused to provide cops with a urine sample because he had been taking heavy doses of prescription opioids for injuries he sustained from previous car wrecks, the insider continued. Martin County Sheriff John Budenswick claimed Woods refused to comply with the urine test simply because he was trying not to incriminate himself. Woods was also charged with property damage and refusal to submit to a lawful test. Now, the athlete was infamously arrested in 2017 after being unconscious behind the wheel of his running car while high on a cocktail of prescription painkillers. He took a plea for reckless driving and served a year of probation. Here's the thing. Down in the Sunshine State, when you get arrested for DUI or they ask for a sample of your blood and urine, you have to comply. And if you don't, it's a misdemeanor charge. Now, I've seen his booking photo, and there's something going on with Tiger's eyes. They were definitely bloodshot and very droopy. But here's the thing. No matter what happens with this case, he's not going to jail. It's his second DUI, and he's got the money and means, great attorneys, and they're going to plea bargain this thing down to a misdemeanor. I don't even see it going as a felony. But the thing is, with the kind of money this guy makes, he should definitely Uber or have a chauffeur on staff. So for more behind-the-scenes NYPD stories, be sure to check out my new book, NYPD, Behind the Blue Wall of Silence.
Sterling! Sterling every damn night.
Sterling across the USA.
Ed Till, he's no shill.
For Sterling every damn night.
Well, as I mentioned before, new place, new neighborhood for me means Mr. Outgoing Gregarious over here loves to see couples walking, dogs being walked. It's not a young people's area. The other side of the community is. This is kind of like the adults over here. But I'm big on saying hi. And when it's a couple, they immediately tell you their names. I immediately forget the names because I get interested in whatever they're saying. And altogether, I've only been here a few weeks. I'm up to like 12 different people I'm saying hi to. So a couple of doors down, a lovely lady named Gloria. And she's from the islands, and you know, she worked in healthcare for years, and just fantastic lady. She's got these two dogs, and the little guy looks like my cousin's dog, little white, little, you know, hairy, little, you know, I don't know if he's a poodle, but he's little, you know, he's just adorable. But then the other dog she's walking is this muscular white sheepdog that I like. As soon as I see the, you know, lock eyes, he's jumping. I can't wait to pet him. And I've seen him a couple of times, met him about a week and a half ago. So today, I had the car out doing one of my Ed Till senior car washes. If we're going to get a torrential rain, I pull the car out of the garage. So I'm getting ready, and I go outside, and there's Gloria with the dogs and across the street. So I give a big wave, and the big dog goes nuts to say hello to me, knocks her flat down on the concrete, on the sidewalk, lying down. The woman, the dog just going insane, running around in circles till I get over there, get her back up. And she says to me, you know, I think the dog's name is Rocco. She says, you know, I don't know if I'm going to be able to keep him. This is the second time that this has happened recently. And, you know, she didn't say it. And I don't know if I'm going to be able to keep him. And, you know, I'm looking at this dog like, this dog is great. I love this dog. This is the kind of dog. If you have this dog, this is a companion on a different level. A lot of my friends have these old dogs that run around the house, and sometimes the dog is there, and sometimes the dog is barely there, and sometimes the dog is adorable. This dog is, it's like Batman and Robin. This dog is half a step behind you, ready to go. He weighs, I don't know, a lot. He took her down like a running back. You know what I mean? Like on a losing team, just poof, she went right down like a, you know, domino. And, then the dog took off. So I get her up. She's got a little bruise, but she's okay. Dog is heading down the street like he's going, not even looking back. He's got the leash on him. So I said to her, well, he's going to come back. He misses you. She goes, I don't know. You don't know. So guess who takes off down the street? That's right. Running full speed, I might add, which I'm not doing so bad at. And we're no injuries from that. So I finally get down there. And luckily, it was time for him to number two. And he had a fire hydrant, not to be cliche, but he found himself a fire hydrant. And, you know, he's just letting loose like it's a documentary on, digestion of a dog over here. It's crazy. I mean, you know, don't you have any modesty at all? You know, angle the hydrant. No, he's boom. And, kind of interesting. He's still a relatively young dog. Went number one, like further, a different location. You know, so wow. Maybe you have a house from the number two builder too. Don't you shut the door in there for yourself? You want a lot of demands, you know, for this dog to excrete over here. What are we doing in the street? So anyway, he visits somebody's garage while he's down there. Garage door is open. He goes in, disappears because they weren't in the garage at the moment. Comes back out, sees me. Continue. He gets a sign of confidence from me because I am pursuing him. He thinks he should go further, keeps going. Now he's headed toward the walking trail. This is where there's going to be pictures of birds and explanations about what they do. And we're very big on that in my area. Turtles, birds. We do a lot, a lot of signs, a lot of education, a lot of typed up things that are posted, and he's heading that way. So finally, I decide to use his name, which I only think I remember from her, okay? So, hey, Lux, he starts running at me like it's a Lassie movie, you know? What he's giving himself an emotional thing about his name, two syllables, Rocco. Comes running, and then I go, Mommy's up there, Mommy's up there. And he goes, past me, charging up toward her, but then he gets halfway toward her. He looks back at me like, hey, you keeping up with me, or what are you doing pulling up the rear over here? I'm like, I'm the one who just ran down here, and you took a big crap in front of my face. That was my hello when I finally got down there with you. Runs back to her, and I love this dog. So I know she would love to give the dog away. I know the dog's crazy about me. I'm crazy about the dog, but I'm going to be away for a while, so we're going to have to look further into this. But man, this dog has a personality on him, man. It's great. Ed Till filling in for Walter Sterling. Sterling on Sunday. We got Lesbians in Space, Strippers on the Loose, Florida Stories. Thea Landon is coming up. Man, it's really a great Sunday night to hang out with you. Hope you guys are, I saw the weather the other day. Went crazy, right? At first it was nice in the 60s, it was mild, and then she goes 29 or something. Easy, will you? Because April is pretty much here. We gotta thaw a little bit. All right, what else do I want to mention? Yeah, no. What else do I want to mention? Who? Tell them who you are, would you? All right. My name is Ed Till. I have been on radio for decades. 10 seconds, great. So that's who I am, having a ball with you, Sterling, on Sunday.
Sterling every damn night.
Ed Till, he's no shill
for Sterling every damn night.
Ed Till, having a blast with you, Sunday night. Oh, man. To do so many cool things on Sunday night. We used to go bowling on Sunday night. Actually, we used to start at 3 o'clock in the afternoon at the Don Carter Lanes. And all the old guys would be bowling first, right? And they were, you know, smoking and, you know, they were big guys and they were rolling them hard and bowling strikes. And, you know, we were waiting to get our ups and finally we'd get a couple of lanes. and it would be them, and it would be us who drove up there, the punk kids, you know, and we would bet on everything. You know, we had quarters and dollars going for triples and doubles and making spares and making splits and all that. And eventually, one of the old guys would come over and say, you know, you guys are making a lot of noise over here, I understand. Is that right? Are we too rowdy? Yeah, keep it down over there. And he's saying this while he's exhaling, you know, a cloud of cancer-causing smoke right in your face. But that was Sunday. And then we'd get out. This is a show, too. We used to break every norm or rule, whatever, school night. So we're finished at Don Carter, which is 35 miles outside the city where we live, and we're starving now. We've been bowling and drinking and all day just having a blast. So it's time to go to McDonald's. We get back to the neighborhood, and we're at McDonald's at 11:45 going on midnight. And two Big Macs, please, large fries, large Coke, chocolate shake, apple pie, and that was the standard. And then it could be more. You could finish that and then turn to your friend and say, you want to split a quarter pounder? And we would eat like it was the end of the world. We would finish and leave a huge mess. We'd get in our cars. The game of tag, everybody's familiar with that when you're a kid, schoolyard, playing on your street, playing in your neighborhood, right? Tag. It came up among my friends after we would eat McDonald's, but they wanted to play tag with the cars. So my friend Frank, with the big Chevy Impala, would take off first. I was in my father's Plymouth Duster. My friend Gary was in his father's Belvedere, I believe. And the whole object was, a guy is it, and he's got to tap the bumper of one of the other cars, but you can't leave the neighborhood. It's all stop signs and residential streets. And this is how we would burn off a couple of Macs and a half, a quarter pounder. Oh, man, and the apple pie. I was never a big fan of the fast food apple pie in and of itself. I was spoiled as a kid. Tons of apple pie was made in my home. I loved apple pie. But at the end of all those Macs and all that, all those fries, it was absolutely perfect. All right, Ed Till, hanging out with you Sunday night. Coming on, man. We got so much more to look forward to here. Strippers on the Loose, Lesbians in Space, Florida Stories, Thea Landon, and more right here on Sterling on Sunday.
Gaffneys, meet the Gaffneys. They live in a 150-year-old house. They've got 8 kids. We don't have time to name them all. Sometimes Dan and Becky like to bicker, and it's always good for a snicker. When you're with the Gaffneys, you know it's Sterling every damn night. Sterling every damn night. It's Sterling every damn night.
I'm Dan Gaffney.
And I'm Becky Gaffney.
And we're here to tell you stories of living in our old house with our 8 kids. And more piles of crafts and things that I don't quite understand.
Okay, you actually make it sound like it's not. So I do a lot of things. I do.
You mean I'm making it sound like the hoarder house that
it's
it is?
It's not. Dan Gaffney, it is not a hoarder house, nor has it ever been a hoarder house. But I work in a lot of different materials, okay? Right. Hobbies, things. And this is why this discussion came up for us today. I thought that I was filling my time with a lot more theater work and my job in the theater, and I wouldn't be needing to, I don't know, make as many things, or I wouldn't have time to make as many things. But there's always a reason. And even after the fabric store closed, we had a new craft store open, and I wasn't going there as much. But when shows come in and I need to go back to my roots of set decoration, sir, I'm going to hit the craft store sometimes.
I had great hopes when the fabric store closed. I'm like, all right, It's really going to give me some more leg room
okay,
at the house.
And that's horrible. And you, let's just say, leg room with the house. You're really ridiculous, actually. I don't even have, like, my own craft room, like, or any place to do things.
Shame.
So when I do things, I pull my stuff out and I do it, like, in the dining room.
But the point is, you're now, you've moved to the theater, so you have all, even more projects and more things going on with the theater, which is great. But they end up at our house.
Okay, because I have to recycle them, or not recycle them, but cycle them back in and then out again, because there's not enough storage room at the theater. So, yeah, they end up back at the house. But it's not a hoarder house.
Right, it's not.
It's definitely not.
I said that for dramatic purposes.
Yeah, I know. You're drama all the time, dear. But the point here is that there is always going to be a reason for me to bring in the crafts and make and do. So right. I think that you need a project, and it's called Build Wifey a She Shed.
Also known as a storage bin, a storage closet, a storage house.
I'm Becky Gaffney. And if you're looking for me, you can find me on Instagram, not in a she shed, at Just Being Mom.
I'm on Facebook, Dan Gaffney Show. Hey, it's Dan and Becky, Sterling every damn night.
Sterling every night. Study books, lusty books. Get cozy with Thea Landon.
I'm smutty book author Thea Landon. Let me tell you a late-night story for Midnight Misfits. Here's an excerpt from my book, The Edge of the Sphere. Leora was frustrated. The guard at the door kept her from her explorations in the forest, and she'd had to settle for practicing in the imaginary tree in the realm of fantasy. She was lucky the unintelligent creature assigned to keep an eye on her was not very meticulous in his job, and her midnight visits with Stephen had gone undisturbed. Unfortunately, he would notice if she attempted to leave the house. She sat on the bottom step of the basement stairs and tried to think through her options. Though the burly guard seemed rather slow and lumbering, she knew she couldn't evade him in the forest for long. She had nothing with which to drug him. Even if such means were available, she couldn't bring herself to end his life. The sphere simultaneously mocked her and brought her solace. It kept her planted in place while allowing her a fleeting respite from her cheerless reality. She stood up and laid her hands on it, ready to summon the illusion that would save her from languishing. The branches of the soaring tree beckoned to her, yet she needed something different to satisfy her desires. Leora pulled her clothes off in a flourish, casting them aside before she plunged into the crystalline pond. The water crashing against her was so convincing in its stimulating characteristics. It further reinforced what she hadn't been able to achieve. She was tempted to see how long she could last underwater, but she didn't want to let go of the dream yet. When she resurfaced, she saw Stephen standing at the shore, his shirt already balled in his hand. "Mind if I join you?" he teased. He added his pants to the pile, then slipped into the water. As he paddled toward her, she remembered the first time they had gone for a swim in the refreshing pool. She had opened herself to him and allowed him to touch her in spectacular ways. They had come so far since that day, and she felt more drawn to him than ever. floating into his arms. She didn't fight the waves as they brought about the collision of their two bodies. "No climbing today?" he asked. She didn't answer him, choosing instead to take in the feel of his slickened skin beneath her. His fingers glided along the small of her back, manipulating her with dexterity as if she were an intricate instrument. The water lapped up between them, lulling her into contentment. As much as she accepted nothing around them was real, she wanted to commit the perfect fantasy to memory. I'm smutty book author Thea Landon, and you're listening to an excerpt from my book, The Edge of the Sphere, which is available at Amazon and at thealandon.com. If you'd like to hear some uncensored excerpts, as well as complete audiobooks, you can go to patreon.com/Thea Landon, and don't forget to send me all your thoughts at smuttythea@gmail.com. Now, let's find out what happens next. He maneuvered them to the shallower end, and she pulled herself closer once he was able to stand. Her lips traveled up to his jawbone, where she let them linger. The taste of him stirred the first flickers of arousal. His fingers tangled in her wet hair, and she leaned back to look at him, searching for the right words to say. Her heart was torn between searching for all she had lost and taking a chance on their love. The thought of disappointing him caused her further anguish. What if their paths led in opposite directions? How could she expect him to sacrifice more for her when he had already given so much? Regardless of everything they faced, he was there for her in the moment, his body warm beneath her touch, the rhythm of his breaths aligning with hers. His heart beat for her. Its steady pulse offered a symbol of his unwavering support. She still hadn't spoken. There was no need. The roiling emotions weren't going to be quelled anytime soon, yet she could convey them through her lips with one longing kiss. The fringe of hair at the base of his neck dampened in the rising mist as she grabbed hold of him, unwilling to let him go in the face of uncertainty. Their tongues melded together, and she drank him in, consuming his mouth as if he was the only one who could breathe fresh vitality into her. Everything about him spoke of the combustible intensity which had grown between them since the day they'd met. Leora wanted to disappear inside those flames, to forget everything troubling her. Her burdens were temporarily destroyed as she dragged herself against the currents to press herself alongside him. The water kept her afloat, creating the sense of weightlessness. She locked her legs around his body in an inescapable embrace. Her chest flattened against his as she let him smother her with his fiery kiss, tingling with the anticipation of what was to come. Eyes closed, she tried to block out anything that wasn't him. pretending they were the center of their own universe. In her haste to feel nearer to him, she had neglected to lavish attention on his lower half. Afraid he would dissipate into the surrounding vapors if she let him go even for a second, she shifted backward just enough to allow him to reach down and angle himself into the proper position. She ached for him, and it was an exercise in patience to let him take charge while she lamented the utter emptiness within her core. Oh, unfortunately, I need to stop here for tonight, but you know you can always have more. That was an excerpt from my book, The Edge of the Sphere, which is available at Amazon and at thealandon.com. If you'd like to hear some uncensored excerpts, as well as complete audiobooks, you can go to patreon.com/thealandon, and don't forget to send me all your darkest thoughts at smuttythea@gmail.com. I'm smutty book author Thea Landon for Sterling Every Damn Night.
Sterling every damn night.
Oh man, is that love seat music right there? That is. There's another thing they have in the parlor that people would sit on. There's a love seat, the lounge, right, that only has the swooping back to it, and the women used to just, you know, like lie there. It was a Marilyn Monroe type of horizontal. Oh man, that's the vibe. Anyway, I'm Ed Till. Welcome. Sunday is depending on where you are, turning into Monday for some. For others, there's still something left of Sunday night. Remember being out with your friends years ago, and you're like, oh, you know, that that bar with the band, I think they're still going for another 40 minutes, and like, yeah, it's going to take us 10 minutes. Hey, it gives us a half an hour. Let's go. Tomorrow's work, we used to say. Some people have contacted me on my website, edtill.com. That's edtyll.com. Also, you're welcome to use Instagram, the at sign there, just say it to be annoying, edtyll. So that's ED for Ed. And then Till is T-Y-L-L. The book also, somebody said, what was that book again? Hired Tongue is the name of the book. And it's hilarious. I hope you find it that way. EdTill.com is how you can get an autographed copy. And Amazon.com is right there for the unautographed copy. I like Amazon. I don't know. There's a lot of people in my line of work here, on air, and also stand up, and just performers and creatives, man, they do not like Amazon. When I was first on the air, early 80s, the anti-Walmart was another one. Evil, terrible Walmart. I was in Walmart today. And the people of Walmart, by the way, we're going to hear about later this hour. And everything you could ever need to do to survive. I mean, just get a cot in the back of the store. The food, the clothes, the medicine, the this, the that, the financial services, the Medicare. It's unreal. Now, you know, any minute they try to tell you something horrible, it's supposed to taint. That's an interesting word. To taint all of this. There's probably a better word for that. Color it, well, you know, it doesn't have the impact of taint. But tainting is a thing. It's unfair for category. I don't think it's wise to pick a category. Everybody, the way I categorize things, you must be no good. because I liked Gittleson's Hardware Store. We had that on my block as a kid. I loved the grocery store. I loved everybody. Cosmo, all these guys had little operations on our neighborhood sidewalk. But what's the ball game here? You want it for the lowest price, especially the families. I don't know, you're a senior citizen, and you still got kids and grandkids at the dinner table. Seems like 4 or 5 nights a week, everybody's eating together. It's not, eating when I was a kid was not the big operation it has become. There were no television shows about how to eat, what to eat. Did you eat? Are you eating too much? Are you 600 pounds? Are you a waif? You know, we got to force feed you. I mean, it's every aspect of the consumption universe enough. But what I enjoy and what I think it is highly recommended is this kind of thing in its original format. Am I wrong about this? Original format for all this stuff was fantastic. So anyway, that is, that's how I think we could, you gotta watch out because people have all kinds of situations that they're in. But when you are at Walmart, I believe that you can do the best for your a dollar. All the way around, not perfect, not the everybody's you know, negative. It's not the cheapest. It's not this. Nitpicking the little ecosystem they got in there is a much better ecosystem for struggling people than ever was available. I love Cosmo's Deli, but at Cosmo's Deli today, you'd be paying $11 for a ham sandwich. What are you going to do with that? Although, In some neighborhoods, probably listening to me right now, they're like, hey, I'll take that $11 ham sandwich. I'm paying $18.50 right now. So I don't know. And Amazon's the same way. They get so worked up. And I love all of this. Oh, look that. You could look it up right there. Just get your finger on your phone and, right? I mean, don't you remember? We used to have to read. We used to have to read and get information over here and bring it over there and then maybe communicate it to a third person. Now, click it, highlight it. And, ooh, my favorite expression is when you look for these, you know, obscure things now is, oh, there it is. Oh, you just kind of expect it. And I do. So I don't know. The people of Walmart, I've had the nicest ladies. I'm very hard to please. You probably been listening. Yeah, you sound like a PIA. So the easiest thing for me is to swoop down, get everything I think I need, sort it all out, and sometimes things have to go back. And they're nice as could be. I don't know if they're getting raises or they're all on ayahuasca, but man alive, it has been a positive vibrino at the return desk. Very nice. So I got nothing but great things to say, but I have to tell you, they were the, you know, Dr. Evil of their time. Everybody was against it. And they're crushing, you know, the mom and pop store. Look, I love a mom and pop store. But mom and pop cannot do the kind of, what do you call it? Buy a warehouse full, right? Exactly. Right. Buy in bulk or there's a volume. They can't afford the volume. Okay. There's nothing evil about somebody who can volume buy everything they can think of, have it in a huge warehouse and make it show up at your house. I have to say, I don't mean to be so endorseful of Walmart, but they are tempting me with this Walmart Plus because I didn't think I would do enough Amazon living and TV and whatever to get in there. I was going to, you know, not use it. But I can tell you the Walmart experience. Now, there are some exceptions. There's certain things you like to buy at a certain supermarket because maybe that supermarket specializes in your brand or whatever. So I got a couple of things coming out of Publix. Now, you know, I'm speaking to you from a Florida location, the great Publix. And my favorite in the American South is Winn-Dixie. So just for a couple of little items, this evil thing that people were very upset about when I was first on the air, and is this going to be it, Ed? You watch it, Ed. It's all going to go down in your lifetime. I'm going to be long gone, but it's going down. I would say, why? What is so bad about Walmart? Nah, Ed, you don't know. You're too young to understand. And now here I am, quite of age of understanding, and I really think it's been a net plus. My cousin's been working for them for years. I mean, he's way up in the chain. I don't really know what he does, but he did start out at their neighborhood fresh food dealio when, like, the first one opened up somewhere in Dallas or what. I don't know. It's a long story, but he's a big contributor to the corporation and what they do and how they do it. And he's very customer attentive and et cetera, et cetera. So, anyway, there you go. I'm looking forward to the people of Walmart and every other great thing that happens on Sterling on Sunday.
The people of Walmart.
Amarillo, Texas. Yeah. You know, there's only two type of people in Amarillo, I hear. Steers and, well, you know, you've heard the line. From an old movie, The Officer and a Gentleman. Well, a feller named Isaiah Zuniga Valley, he's 20, picked up in Hereford, Texas. Is there a better name for a town in Texas than Hereford? Named after the wonderful cow. Yeah. Do you have a steak tonight? Likely it's a Hereford, most popular meat cow in all of the U.S. of A. Apparently in Amarillo, there was a house party. A lot of times house parties are absolutely fantastic, but 20 years old, sometimes they go awry, and this one did. Zuniga Valley's accused of shooting two people. Yeah, a week ago on Mississippi Street in Amarillo. Apparently, Zuniga Valley started showing off his AR-15 rifle and was asked to leave the party. You see, this was a party of peace. But this feller turned around, he was not going to be taking anybody giving him orders, and squeezed off 40 rounds, apparently, hitting the house and a pickup truck in the front yard. Yeah, he's in a lot of trouble. And where'd he run to? The safest place on earth. Your neighborhood Walmart. Not a smart place to go to, mainly because Walmart is the home of a lot of cops. There's a lot of crime that goes on in the parking lot, etc. The cops were looking for this feller, and there he was at the Walmart. They pick him up. Isaiah, yeah, he's probably going to be doing a little time in the Hooskow. And Amarillo, not necessarily a safe place. Five people were killed on Sunday in four different shootings. Thank goodness Isaiah didn't kill anybody. One of the victims still in the hospital at last report. Generally this, booze, drugs, and guns do not mix. If you go to a party and someone shows you their gun, that's the time to go. Explain that to the kids. It's a good thing to live by. I live by that. I live by peace. For the people of Walmart, I'm Velo Hool. Sterling, every damn night.
Every damn night from sea to shining sea.
Ed Till in for Walter Sterling on Sunday. Sterling on Sunday, having so much fun. You know, I heard a couple of things, overheard a discussion today, wrote down a note to share this with you, happened at the supermarket. I have a thing about the supermarket now. A lot of them are preparing these hot meals, and I'm a big fan of hot veggies and a surprise for whatever the meat is. Boy, it's gonna. Some people are. Why are you eating meat? I don't find other proteins sufficient. I'm looking. I'm open minded. I'm not dead set on it, but man, delish. So. I scoped it out on a first visit because I had a bunch of stops to make. Swung around on the return and got this jerk chicken with some crazy mashed potatoes. I have no idea how they season these mashed potatoes. They're great. And one of my big favorites is the niblet corn, the good old-fashioned corn. Love corn. And spinach at home. Do all my own spinach on that to get the green. Oh, it's good to know that you could go have somebody fix you a hot meal. And I don't know if you've ever had a supermarket or my good friends at Walmart talking about the last segment and this crazy story that you just heard about the people of Walmart. This is why I love people who work at Walmart, like my nice lady today, or the lady that does my hot meals for me. She wears a hairnet, by the way. It's a quite elegant. It's got glittery things in it. We're good friends. I always forget her name, but she's got the name tag, so it doesn't matter. I don't have to memorize it, but we're good buddies. And the thing about eating well is it's a supermarket situation. So for the beverage, I kind of I enjoy a coffee on the go. There's coffee at home, I brew myself, but coffee on the go. So I grab a coffee on the go the other day, having a delicious 8-piece wing General Tso hot wings, whatever I mean, delicious. And the coffee cup lid captures my attention. And I, you know, it's the one where you can sip off the top, flip the thing, lock that little trap door down and drink it. The way the sun was hitting this, the things that were stamped in to the coffee lid were myriad. There were 99 things. The patent number, the serial, this was all impressed. What do you call it? When you print it by making an impression in there? It's not engraved, you idiot. No, it's stamped on there. There you go. Good old-fashioned word. Nobody knows what you mean anymore with that word. But stamped, looks like. And it's coffee and this. And I went, wow, all of this societal regulation over a coffee lid. I said, how old are you, Grandpa Ed? You remember when a lid wasn't even automatic. When I bought coffee for the very first time online, waiting for the school bus, and because in high school we went far, far away to our high school, you got your coffee without a lid. And if you asked for a lid, they would, you know, and turn around and give you one. And that lid was snap shut. There was no trap door. There was no place for the steam to come out. There was no anything, no perforations. It was just on top of the cup, sealed shut. And you had to play the game of, you know, how long for this thing to be drinkable, and just rip off the top and just down it. But if we're regulating coffee lids, I don't even know why we have coffee lids now. I don't even understand why all this plastic. I don't get it. They talk plastic, terrible, bad, evil plastic every minute. And then they come up with the coffee pod. Yeah. How about we hate plastic so much, we came up with a new way to get a ton more plastic into every garbage can in America. Every job site, they love the K-Pod because it's clean. There's no grounds. It's not going to attract any bugs and insects in the break room. I get all this. Oh, is that right? This is hilarious. But I set it to vibrate. I guess I had to turn the ringer off physically, I thought, by choosing. Okay. Well, anyway, what that means is, Edward, you have a break coming up here, so you can't just ramble right through it like you like to do. So it is. It's fantastic being with you this Sunday night, whatever time zone that you're in. Great being with you. Ed Till, filling in for Walter Sterling. Sterling, every damn night, and a great time.
Oh, Sterling, every night. Sawdust, gold. Parker, and this is Florida Story.
Thank you. To the Tampa area, where in the skies above Tampa is a police helicopter, and they were doing their normal work, and they noticed a little flash in their equipment, their video camera that they constantly have going, just blew up white. And what that means is someone's pointing a laser at him. Actually, it blew up green. And you've heard these stories about how they find some guy and arrest him for pointing a laser at a helicopter or airplane or something. And I've always wondered, how do they catch these dudes? Well, you want to see what happens when they catch them? The Tampa police put it on YouTube. And this is I find this absolutely fascinating. Now, you're going to hear the audio just fine, but what you're missing is there is a police helicopter that is floating overhead, and it looks like you're just doing Google Maps at night from a 45-degree angle. And his little camera zooms in so well that after a couple of flashes, he finds the apartment window, and he can lock his video camera on this. So even if he's flying around, there's a little X that he puts on there that it'll keep the camera frame focused on that X that will stay in the center. And so then what happens is they just wait for him to do it a couple more times, and they figure out which window it is, and they can tell the cops exactly where to go. Hey, he's on the second floor, and here's the corner of the streets, and I guess you have to know the map pretty good.
For now, I got somebody at Bush and 56 hitting us with a green laser.
Yep, it's that simple. I never saw that before. I always wondered how that happened. Now you know, and some Florida man had to go to jail for me to learn that, but I appreciate that. Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
What we have is at a school in Florida is a mom. She has two kids who go to this school, and she is one of these good moms that volunteers. And it's fantastic that, you know, to have some parents step up, because, you know, the schools are always short on volunteers. And so, I mean, this woman's basically a hero, and everyone loves her until they find out that, oh no, she has an OnlyFans account. And for those of you who don't know what OnlyFans is, congratulations on being a decent human being. But OnlyFans is a place where you can charge people to access your content. And it's sort of, you know, like a do-it-yourself porn site. I mean, you could do cooking demonstrations, or you could give music lessons or whatever, but that's not what it's known for. Okay, I know what all the guys are wondering. Is she hot? Yes, she's absolutely gorgeous. Okay. So this Florida mom, she's 31, by the way. And so Orange County Public School says, that's just too distracting. We can't be having you. And I thought that was ridiculous because, look at her. No, that's not a good excuse. I mean, this is a sort of a conundrum, because I must admit, I would find it quite distracting if, you know, I was volunteering for some school event and she, I think I'd be okay with it. What's their problem with this? I don't know. You figure in Florida with all the stuff they have going on, they have 28 other priorities above. Hey, this beautiful mom has an OnlyFans account. But, you know, if parents complain and you're the school board, I mean, what you gonna do? So now the Florida mom is not allowed to volunteer at her kid's school anymore. She says she's going to keep doing the OnlyFans, but she has also filed a lawsuit against the Orange County Public Schools for $1 million, which would be her biggest subscriber thus far, I'd imagine. Hold my beer. So Walter sent me this story from the Washington Post, but I've seen write-ups of similar issues here, and that has to do with the number of insurance companies that are leaving the state of Florida. And so, you know, I go through this one in the Washington Post. Well, you know, I keep up with the news pretty good. And maybe there's something I could learn from this, though, if Walter thinks it's important enough to send to me. And so they're telling the story of a situation that's happening in Florida at Northport. You know, AAA just pulled out of Florida. Farmers Insurance has pulled out of Florida. United Property and Casualty just went under, and they are the ninth property insurer in Florida to go insolvent since 2021. So in the last 2 years. And I don't, you know, dismiss this lightly, but am I surprised? Oh my God, no. Have you ever heard an episode of Florida Stories before? Of course insurers are pulling out. They've got alligators and crocodile living side by side, the only place on planet Earth where that happens. Everything gets reset by a hurricane about every, I don't know, 3 to 5 years. They got Scarface at the bottom. They got Deliverance at the top. They've got all the Mickey Mouse stuff in the middle. We've all watched them transfer from, make these great face changes from cocaine to heroin to oxys to meth to bath salts, and I guess fentanyl now is probably taking the lead. Of course, insurance. If you were an insurance company, if you just started your own little insurance firm, I would recommend that you start with the other 49 states first and dip your toe into Florida last. The real story is, how did they have any insurance companies to begin with? Hold my beer. So it starts off with the funny headline, Florida woman douses herself in Diet Mountain Dew to erase DNA after killing her roommate, 79. And you're like, wait a second, her roommate, 79 years old? Yes. How old is she? All right, this is the perfect question. 35. 35-year-old Florida woman has a 39-year-old Florida woman has a 79-year-old male roommate, and she killed him. She killed him. She took off her clothes. She set him on fire. She went on the run. Cops catch up with her pretty quick because they're like, okay, we have a dead guy. Maybe the roommate knows something. Where's the roommate? Oh, she has disappeared. Oh, okay. So they go and track her down. And the 35-year-old Florida woman, by the way, not too bad looking. I've done worse. But, you know, the neck tattoos kind of ruin it. She would have a really good thing going here. But also in the mugshot, you can see she has the shark eyes thing going. Like the animatronic Jaws shark robot from the movie. Those eyes have no emotion behind them. They're incapable of emotion. They can move side to side. They can look like they're looking at things, but they're not actually looking at things. She's just a crazy person. So when you see this lady's mugshot, who, the base human being we're looking at is actually quite a pretty woman, but you throw in all the tattoos on her shoulder and her clavicle and then the neck and the 1,000-yard stare. Can you believe that she would get a little stabby on her 79-year-old roommate? Oh, yeah. Yeah, I can absolutely believe that. In fact, I probably would have predicted it. Hold my beer. I don't think we've ever been here before. Our final Florida story is coming from Wilton Manors, Florida. And it sounds very proper, doesn't it? Wilton Manors. And Wilton Manors has the most adorable problem I have ever heard of. There is an illegal rabbit breeder, and she has decided that she doesn't want to do this anymore. So she took all her rabbits and she just let them out into the wild outside of Wilton Manors. And you would think, well, bunnies, they're going to get snatched up by coyotes or stray dogs or something else real quick. And I don't know how they've done it, but they've reproduced fast enough that we now have a new invasive species problem that I've never seen anywhere on planet Earth. They have these adorable, fuzzy little rabbits that are running all over Wilton Manors, Florida. And it is absolutely adorable. The pictures of these things, that they are super fluffy. You get this picture of rabbits in your head, what they must look like in the wild. These don't look like wild rabbits. These look like the cutesy ones that are in commercials, like laying Cadbury eggs, or, you know, you're giving one to a niece on Easter. And it is so cute. I would love to have my area overrun with these bunnies. I don't think they would last very long around my neighborhood. There's too many dogs and whatnot. But what a great problem to have. Here's where it gets silly, though. This is where you can't just have a cute little, fluffy invasion. What they have now is these people who are trying to raise the $40,000 it would cost for a rescue group to come, not get rid of the bunnies, not kill them. They want to capture them humanely, neuter them, vaccinate them, and then give them shelter until they die of natural causes. They're saying this is a rescue program. It's like, excuse me, these were animals who were living in captivity, domesticated bunnies who are been set free, and they've been given the gift of freedom. You're not rescuing them. You're like recapturing and re-imprisoning them. If they just have it totally backwards, but it's the cutest thing you've ever seen. An invasive species of bunnies. Finally, an invasive species we're happy about. Hold my beer. Florida Stories is produced by Spring Rock. I'm James Parker, and this is Florida Stories.
Sterling every night. Study books, rusty books. Get cozy with the owl and dawn.
I'm smutty book author Thea Landon. Let me tell you a late night story for Midnight Misfits. Here's an excerpt from my book, Sonata for Springtime. Natalie danced her fingers down to the waistband of my pants and gave it a little tug. Somewhere in the back of my mind, I guess I thought there was a chance our date could end up like this. All the blood in my body rushed between my legs. Next time, I should just let you plan everything, then. Her bare skin beckoned to me. I cupped the swell of her hips, giving them a playful squeeze. Her back arched and she rubbed against me. This time, I couldn't prevent the groan from escaping my mouth. She bestowed another swift kiss upon my lips, her face hovering close to mine. If you're leaving it up to me, do you want to go upstairs? I struggled to think clearly. I don't know. This carpet is pretty soft and fluffy. She burst out laughing, extricated herself from my grasp, and scrambled to her feet. Come on, she said, jerking my wrist. I stood and let her lead me toward the staircase. After a few steps, though, she froze. Hold on a second. My heart lurched. What's wrong? Turning around, she fiddled with the ends of her hair. Okay, so maybe I didn't consider all the details in anticipation of our date today. She offered me a bashful smile. My bedroom is kind of a disaster right now, so can you give me, like, 5 minutes to straighten up a little bit? I fought the urge to laugh. I promise you, I am not thinking about how neat your bedroom is, nor will I judge your housekeeping skills. Her shoulders slumped as she pleaded with me. No, it's really bad. She took another step toward the stairs, but I seized her elbow and pulled her back. After all this time, I said, snaking one arm around her waist, I'm afraid to let you go for too long. Another frenzied kiss punctuated my statement. Natalie laced her fingers behind my neck, her tongue swirling around mine as she melted back into my embrace. After a moment or two, she swiveled away from me and made a beeline for the stairs. 5 minutes! Already, the room seemed colder without her. Knowing what it was like to touch her and have her touch me in return, I couldn't get enough. I caught up to her before she reached the first step and spun her around. Jonathan, she squealed. Our lips collided before she could say anything else. One of my hands tangled in her hair while she folded her arms around me, slipping beneath my shirt to skim her palms over my back. I shuddered at the contact, driven wild with desire. I needed more from her, needed more of her. Waiting was impossible. Snippets of what we'd experienced so far with each other flashed through my mind, and an idea began to take shape. Without releasing her, I guided her to the piano, nudging her toward the bench. She sat down, facing away from it. I kissed her once more, then knelt on the floor, much like I had when she'd played for me, though this time I positioned myself between her legs. I gazed up at her while my hands glided over her thighs. Her face was flushed, her lips parted as her chest rose and fell with heavy breaths. With deliberation, I folded up the bottom of her dress, exposing the black lace triangle of her thong. As I prepared to remove it, I remembered something crucial. Reaching around her, I closed the lid of the piano, protecting the keys. She giggled and leaned back, propping herself up on one elbow. I returned to my previous task and hooked one finger into either side of her thong. Her hips lifted off the bench, allowing me to slide her panties down and off. Oh, I had better stop here for tonight before we are all in a world of trouble. But you know you can always have more. That was an excerpt from my book, Sonata for Springtime, which is available at Amazon on Kindle Unlimited. I'm smutty book author Thea Landon for Sterling Every Damn Night.
Email WalterMSterling@gmail.com. I answer every email. I've got a pretty good website, WalterSterlingShow.com, WalterSterlingShow.com. And the greatest gift that you and I can receive is a request for help.
Sterling is brought to life by these creative people. Musical director Lee Harris. Technical wizard Dave Scalish. Operations Frank Canal. Sound mixers Sean Cicero, Sean Walsh, Andrew Torres. Voice actors James Parker, James Copeland, that's me, Dyke, Charles Van Sant, Robert Clotworthy, Peter Thiel, Erotic Thrills Thea Landon, Class Act Jill Brooke, Baked Goods Steve and Selena JB Bakery, Skullduggery Vic Ferrari, Blessings Father James Drucker, Meteorologist Dr. Dave Iser, Writer Jerry the Writer, Business Guidance, Craig Kitchen. Program originated by Chris Olivero. Long-suffering executives, David Yagaroff and Greg Stalker. With respect, Alex Bennett, Sally Jesse Raphael, and Gene Shepard.